if you weren't here last week, we are doing Proverbs for the summer. And what we did, or what I did, was went through Proverbs, took the words that were repeated the most often, besides the normal does and a's and n's and of's, and we're talking about one of them each week. Last week we did way, and this morning is a fun one, her. Her. Now, her is a funny one to bring up in Protestant American church for some people. If you start talking about the sacred feminine, people just like, ooh, I don't know if I like that. Or you start talking about God being a her. We're going to pray to her. People, whoa, okay. Well, I don't like that. Now, some people like Linda are cheering because she just read a book. Yeah, making Kent nervous. See, Kent's already nervous. Oh, gosh, my wife's embarrassing me. But this is what happens. We even bring it up and we get a little bit, ooh. And I remember when I was first became a pastor, went out to coffee with a couple. They wanted to talk about two things. One of them was a very theological, pretty critical thing, in my opinion. And the other one was why we had a woman speak. And so we got to the coffee, and we kind of dove into this pretty, again, big theological thing. And like, okay, yeah, I mean, I'm really not that worried about that. I really want to talk about why a woman was able to speak at church. And I just thought, really? Okay. I mean, you'd rather talk about this than God? But we kind of have this fascination or preoccupation, or it makes us nervous, or whatever it is about bringing the feminine into church because it's masculine and the Bible is masculine. Well, it's not. So if you think it is, you've been programmed the wrong way. It's not, it never has been. Women have always been equal, in my opinion. And we come to one today where Proverbs talks about her. Now, he talks about two kinds of hers. One of them is this first picture here. Battlestar Galactica, anybody see it? Okay, if you haven't, you guys need to see this show, not because of her. She's a robot. I'll just get that out. Up front, a Cylon, okay, for those of you who saw it back in the 80s. One of the best shows ever created. It's on Netflix. It dives into all kinds of things. But again, okay, this is the her, one of the hers, and then we have another her. So seriously, there's two main characters in Proverbs, you could argue. One of them is her, and we're talking about number 6 from Battlestar Galactica, if you've seen it. The other one is her, Mother Teresa. The hers. And that's kind of where we even go to. Her, the adulteress, her, wisdom. Now, it's interesting if you think about Proverbs written by Solomon. We've talked a little bit about this. Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. A grand total of, for those of you who are short with math, 1,000 women at his disposal. 1,000 women. So, we don't know who Solomon's first wife was. Most people would say it was the daughter of the Pharaoh of Egypt. And there's a lot of debate on when he was married, somewhere between the age of 12 and 20. So let's say it was this daughter of the Pharaoh at age 15. I mean, 12 is just, wow, 12. Let's say it's 15. We can imagine having this love, this first love, or even this love that he always goes back to. And if you read Song of Songs, another book he wrote all about love, you have to imagine that at least some of this 1,000, again, I have no concept of having 700 wives, none of us do. I don't know how you feel about 700 women. I assume there's a small percentage you actually really have some kind of special thing with. And those, you almost, this is that kind of that good her. But then we also know from 1 Kings chapter 11 that it was all of these wives that brought down Solomon. This was the reason he failed. This was the reason the country would go and split and never be one again, or as powerful as it was, because Solomon began to make altars and temples to the gods that his wives served, including gods where children were sacrificed. Some pretty heavy-duty stuff here. So you can imagine Solomon, as he's writing Proverbs, who their main characters, her. A lot of experience with her. Experience with her and experiences with her. So let's write about that. But again, even though our minds first go to kind of these types of imagery, this is way bigger than just women, right? This is a much bigger, broader, higher up picture of her and her, and how we run into these ideas throughout life. Wisdom and the adulterer, the woman of adultery. Okay? So, before we get into kind of this broader scope, for one thing, it's actually really amazing, too, how much this story holds up, these hers. I mean, as much as dating has changed, marriage has changed, cultures have changed, there's still something about him and her. It strikes us all, and you would argue in most cultures it would. This thing, we almost get it. You even show these pictures, and it's like, yeah, I get where this is going. Her and her. So Solomon is going to talk about both of them. We're going to dive in and try to learn something for the modern world today. And before we do, again, just a reminder, Solomon is not the formula guy, right? We've talked about this over and over, but I think we have to remind ourselves because we start reading this and we instantly go to, oh yeah, I know what all this means. Yeah, I just need to stay away from her and move toward her. And if I do that, then all these things. This is not Solomon, though. This is about ways, broader, bigger ideas of wisdom than just, if I do this, then this will happen. If I stay away from her, then no. So keep that in mind as we go through it, okay? So here's the first thing about her as you start to dive into it. You start to see different ways that they speak. When talking about her, and we're talking about number six her, bad her here. Got the slide. Yep, that's her. We don't want to show that too often. We are in church. Okay, we got a verses, Casey. Slide. There we go. We're going to Bible here. Okay. Casey's. Okay, just kidding. That was bad. Okay. Here we go. Out in the open, wisdom calls aloud. She raises her voice in the public square. On top of the wall, she cries out. At the city gate, she makes her speech. We read this last week. There's one more right after this. Let's get this idea of wisdom crying out. Does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? At the highest point along the way where the paths meet, she takes her stand. Beside the gate leading into the city, at the entrance, she cries aloud. To you, O people, I call out. I raise my voice to all mankind. Again, you read this and you get this idea of her. And again, Solomon has no problem putting wisdom, putting the ultimate in a her. And he expresses it in this metaphor of she's crying out. She's calling. She's begging. Over and over, listen. And then you have the other her in quite a contrast. Wisdom will save you also from the adulterous woman, from the wayward woman with her seductive words. For the lips of the adulterous woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. I mean, the contrast as you look at these two hers is amazing. She is over here, listen, everyone, please, crying, begging, on top of the walls, on top of the hills, constantly. And she is over here with just a look, smooth words, lips drip like honey. I mean, the contrast is tremendous. Please, and just this look. The Hebrew to smooth, to make it easy. To seduce is to just open it up so it's just so easy. What do we do with this? Well, I get irritated. I don't like this about life. It's kind of one of those, you think about it, and we have sayings of, I just feel like I'm always telling him or telling her. I feel like I'm saying the same thing over and over. I'm just begging them to just see this or hear this. And it just feels like they never do. And we'll say, I mean, what is it about her? What is it about him? What is it about that thing? What is, I mean, I don't get it. That person just showed up in their life and suddenly they're just off. I mean, we know this kind of language, right? I feel like I just can't get through. Listen. And oh, all it took is one look. And which brings up some other interesting things. This is why people like atheists have some good arguments. And they would say things like, you see, this is the problem with Christianity. This is your whole problem. You're fighting the natural human impulse. You're fighting where our passions want to take us. I mean, this is just one little look, and that's where, and you're over here just yelling and screaming and saying, oh, no, it doesn't go over there. You got to be over here and just please listen. And it's such a fight because you're fighting a fight you're never going to win. And then you start thinking about words of Jesus that say, narrow is the path to life, and few will find it. Wide is the path to destruction, and many will find it. And I look at that and I say, that just bugs me. I mean, why didn't God flip that? God, let's make a world where wide is the path to life, and narrow is the path to destruction. I mean, wouldn't that seem to work a lot better? Why not go there? And we can talk about maybe why things ended up that way, but I think it's really important, honestly, to just admit that it's the way it is. Wisdom has the uphill battle. She has the uphill battle. We are more susceptible, and it's easier to just slide over here. And this also makes sense with life. Things that are really good or worth having are often more work. I mean, it's just some of this stuff, it makes sense. I was with a friend who was starting a business, and we were having coffee, and he was telling me, I don't know, this is so much work, and I've got to do this, and I got to do that, and I don't know, I might just not do it. It might not be worth it. And, you give that line, it's so cliche. If it was easy, everyone would do it. If it was easy to start this business you want to start, you wouldn't be the one starting it. It would have been done 100 times. It takes work. Yeah, it's hard. It's going to take some effort, but that's kind of how it is a lot of the times. And again, when we hear this, right, we kind of instantly go to, right, it's so hard to date Mother Teresa, and it would be so easy to date number 6. But what if we're talking about bigger, deeper spiritual issues even? What if we're talking about our faith, our Christianity? There's this version it's hard. And I don't know, sometimes it feels like it's crying out. And what if following Jesus is in this realm too? There's a really easy way, seductive, smooth, wide open, yeah, to follow Jesus. And then there's this other way it's hard. But what if that's the one that's worth it? Which brings up, well, what are these women offering? I mean, what is this all about, right? Because if it is hard, and if it's a tougher uphill battle, then what are we going for? This is the her of wisdom. Solomon says she's more profitable than silver. She yields a better returns than gold, more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand. Riches and honor are in her left. Her ways are pleasant. Her paths are peace. She is a tree of life. A lot of this goes back to even in the beginning. These words, precious, profitable, nothing you can desire, pleasant, peaceful. She's a tree of life. She will protect, watch over, exalt, honor, and give you grace. You look at this, and it's basically life in the way that Solomon has talked about it. This is being alive. This is her. What is she offering? She's offering life. Now, what is she offering? Her house leads down to death, her paths to the spirits of the dead. She is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Her paths wander aimlessly, but she does not know it. Her house is a highway to the grave, leading down to the chambers of death. Not sure how many more ways Solomon can say the same thing. Death. So what we're really talking about here with these two women are pretty huge, monstrous, all-important ideas. Life, death. Now what's crazy is the woman who's offering life is having to scream it out and shout it out loud. I've got life, I've got life, I've got life. And to that atheist I was talking about earlier, I would say this. Christianity is always about life. Christianity is never trying to take away life. And sometimes I feel like within the Christian realm, we are trying to shout this all the time, some of us. Everyone, no, 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 no. It's about freedom. Everyone, no, no, this is about being inspired. Everyone, no, no, no. This is about living. Everyone, this is about passion. This is about good. This is about precious. This is about life. And it rings so true even within the Christian circle. I feel like sometimes we just have to shout it because everyone's just sliding over here. Which brings up more questions, right? What is so alluring about death? How does she do it? I mean, if this is life, and this is death, and all death has to do is give us one of those little looks, and we're off chasing death. What is going on? Why does this happen? Solomon gives us a really cool story. I'm just going to read you the whole thing. And it's why, again, it's so important that he uses her. Because it's one of those stories you read it and you go, I get that. Okay? So Solomon, at the window of my house, I looked down through the lattice. You can see him just up in his massive, gorgeous palace. I saw among the simple, I noticed among the young men, a youth who had no sense. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house, at twilight as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in. Then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent. She is unruly and defiant. Her feet never stay at home. Now in the street, now in the squares, at every corner she lurks. She took hold of him and kissed him, and with a brazen face she said, "Today I fulfilled my vows, and I have food from my fellowship offering at home. So I came out to meet you. I looked for you, and I have found you. I have covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let's drink deeply of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. My husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took his purse filled with money, and he will not be home till full moon," so a long time. "With persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. At once he followed her, like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose, till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it will cost him his life." Just one more. "Now then, my sons, listen to me. Pay attention to what I say. Do not let your heart turn to her ways or stray into her paths. Many are the victims she has brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a highway to the grave, leading down to the chambers of death." And you read this story, I don't feel like I really need to say much. You just think about it for a moment. And again, this imagery, we've all been there. We've all done this at one level or another. Some of us have watched, some of us have participated, most of us have done both. Again, not with the prostitute. This is not necessarily meaning this is the only way, but in this story, she comes out with her smooth, seductive words. And you watch it happen. How many times have my wife and I said, "Oh, I just feel like I'm watching a train wreck." I'm sure people have said it about me. Look, oh. There he goes. Look at him, he's so excited, so happy, so seduced. It's leading to death. It's one more little hint, maybe, as we look at this. Folly is an unruly woman. Solomon likes that word, unruly. We don't say that very often. She is simple and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. "Let all who are simple come to my house." To those who have no sense, she says, "Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there, that her guests are deep in the realm of the dead." I read that and was reminded of that house in Ohio. Neighbors would have barbecues, three women in there, in chains. A horrible, atrocious story. But the fact that these people just walk by the house, yeah, nice guys, out cooking on their grill, no idea of the death inside. And so you read these and you start to say, okay, what is going on? I mean, what do we do with this? Neuroscience has said for a long time that there's a flaw in our brain. We have one part of our brain that is all about short-term thrills. It's the more simple parts of our brain, the passions, the fears, the short-term. Then we have another part, some would say more highly evolved, more complex, that looks at long-term consequences, the reasoning, the logic. And so neuroscience says we value short-term thrills over long-term consequences. And if you're a teenager, the parts of your brain that actually are able to even calculate long-term consequences aren't fully formed, so you really value short-term thrills over long-term consequences, which is why your parents are always yelling at you. But this is a problem with us. The short-term thrills look so sweet. And it's hard for us to calculate and reason with the long-term consequences. And in one sense, this is what Solomon is saying. But then you start to think, okay, again, what though? And this is what I think. She is offering a counterfeit life. Because I think we were all created with the desire for life. It's innate. It's in us. We want to live. We're made in God's image. Every human being has this desire to fully live. And if there is an evil, which I believe there is, the best way for an evil to sell death is to disguise it as life. And you read these stories, and this life, it's always, oh, yeah, this will be living. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, stolen water is sweet. Oh, yeah, look at my bed. I've got the nice linens, the perfumes. My husband's gone. You're going to be living for a night. And it's not because some of us want to die. We all want life, and she sometimes is selling it in a more obvious way. Oh yeah, it's right here. It's right here. Or maybe you could say it this way. She is selling a life that will change your circumstances. Oh, you're not living? Oh, what do you need? You need a husband, a wife, a car, a new job, or whatever. Yeah, I'll get you to live. And she is selling a life that says no matter your circumstances, you will live. And if you ask me, that's the only thing God ever promises us. oh no, you'll live. It won't matter what's happening. But we can hardly even believe this. And so we're so allured and seduced by the short-term sweetness and beauty of, oh, here's life. When she says, no, 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 I've got something bigger, better. And it's a little more work. So what do? Solomon gives this list. Cherish her. Embrace her. Keep a path far from her. Don't lust after her beauty or let her captivate you. And I love this. Cherish and embrace this kind of life. If you ask me, we live in a culture that is oversaturated with number six. She's walking around everywhere, constantly saying, you want to live, which we all do, here it is. Come on in. Come on. Keep coming. Bam, that was easy. I mean, it's everywhere. And if anyone should be better at recognizing it, it's us. This is the life Jesus talked about. This is the life we should be cherishing and embracing and saying, no, 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 no. No, you know what I'm going for? I'm going for a life that doesn't matter what my circumstances are. I mean, even saying it, I just feel like a hypocrite. Every week. Oh, man, I just can't wait for this to happen or next day or whatever. And I'm reminding ourselves, as we said again, no, this is living. This is what God says. I will transform you and give you life now, and you will spread that life to others. Oh, don't be seduced by all this stuff. Oh, yeah, it looks so sweet. Her lips drip with honey. And you walk in and she stabs you. It's death. This is the her we want. Let's pray. God, maybe we can just be quiet for a moment and let you speak. This story is so powerful because we all recognize it. Maybe speak right now to us. And make us aware of her and her seduction and her smooth talk. God, help us to stay far from her and to cherish and embrace the her of wisdom, the her of you, the her that offers the kind of life that we all truly desire in our innermost being, the life that is more precious than anything we can imagine, the life that is peace, the life that is grace, the life that somehow rises above circumstances and is awake and aware and alive and full of love and grace and mercy, no matter what. Help us to cherish and embrace that and never be satisfied for the counterfeits. Help us to be a people who model that. And it's in your name we pray. Amen.